You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 29th of April, 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at RadioAlbion.com because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from RussJournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. It's glorious summer's day here. How are things with you?
Oh, it's pretty drab here in Pennsylvania. But the good news is that we're going to be dealing with a comedic topic today. So I think we'll be feeling better by the end of it.
Well, it certainly does. Well, it either makes you laugh or cry, really, looking at Joe Biden and looking at his performance. I mean, he can barely get through his sentences without forgetting what he's actually talking about. And yesterday he gave a speech to Congress, and it was supposed to be a speech to Congress. You've been telling me that actually there were only 40 people there. Only a handful of people tuned in on YouTube. At the time of writing the notes here, there was 8,000 likes and 13,000 dislikes. Comments had been turned off, obviously, because people are going to complain about it. When you think about the millions of people that actually tuned in for when Trump was speaking, this really does give us an indication of how popular Joe Biden really is. And of course, we were told he was the most popular person in the whole of history with the number of people that voted for him. So what we'll do today is we're going to have a little look through Biden's speech to Congress. And I think we'll just start with your thoughts on it, Matt. And also, what was it that he was saying about taxes that you wanted to bring up?
Well, it's something that, you know, Democrats have been saying since at least the Kennedy administration, that they're going to raise taxes on everyone making over $400,000. You know, corporate taxes are going to increase. So, yeah, very typical, you know, Democratic stuff. And you know, the state really doesn't have this kind of power. He's complaining about offshore accounts. He wants to increase the amount of money going to the IRS to step up all kinds of audits, increasing their power over, you know, what they're allowed to look at in terms of our income and things, assets. I really don't see any of this working. Every Democrat's been talking about this since, you know, for decades now. But these corporations are more powerful than the federal government. Their lawyers are a greater number and even higher quality than what the Justice Department or Treasury Department might have. If it didn't work before, it isn't going to work now. And he spent a big chunk of the early part of this speech, which isn't very long, mumbling through this. About, you know, raising taxes on – he says he's not going to raise taxes on the middle class, whatever that might mean. But anyone making $400,000 for some reason is the cutoff, and everything above that he's going to increase. The slogans, the one-liners are, you know – I mean, Clinton said it. Yeah, Lyndon Johnson said it, for God's sakes. You know, and these likes and dislikes, you know, the CNN version has about the same. They did allow comments for a while. There are about 7,000 of them. Everyone I saw was negative, usually making fun of them. This is CNN now. I'm pretty sure they've cut the comments off by now. But not that many people bother to listen. Trump had millions. This guy's had – the biggest I've seen is like 150,000, 180,000 somewhere. The rest are in, you know, five digits. But the guy's considered a joke even by his own party.
It's just every time he says that he's going to do something, it just makes my teeth grate because I know that he's actually not doing anything at all. A very relevant question was asked the other day: who is it that is behind Biden? And we just don't know. All we do know is that he is a puppet. And if you actually have a look at the image that goes with this podcast, you can see he's got two women behind him. and above him. And I don't think it's either of them. We just don't know who is actually pulling Biden's strings. Well, let's have a look at some of what he says here. He says, "Sometimes I have arguments with my friends in the Democratic Party. I think you should be able to become a billionaire or millionaire, but pay your fair share. Recent studies show that 55 of the nation's biggest corporations pay zero federal tax, paid zero federal tax last year. Those 55 corporations made in excess of $40 billion in profit. A lot of companies also reviewed tax in Switzerland, the Cayman Islands, and they benefit from tax loopholes for having offshore jobs and shifting profits overseas. It is not right. We are going to reform corporate taxes so they pay their fair share and help pay for the public investments their businesses will benefit from as well." Well, I would have preferred it if he talked about how the richest people had actually increased their wealth by 300% since the coronavirus outbreak. But what were your thoughts on what he had to say here, Matt?
Well, he did mention that, except he didn't say that these are mostly his friends. He is a part of the oligarchy. Coming out of it, this is the most hypocritical thing, assuming that he really knows what he's saying. He is very close to the MBNA bank, the credit card industry. He sponsored the Bankruptcy Abuse Prevention and Consumer Protection Act of 2005, which made it very difficult to declare bankruptcy. He voted against regulations on banks and corporations. I mean, his voting record is part of the reason some of this stuff has come about. He's voted against anything that forced credit card companies to mention how dangerous it is to just pay the minimum amount every month. He helped repeal all the regulations on the corporations that led to the 2008 crash, Graham-Leach-Bliley law, which removed all that regulation. That was in 1999. He was an active proponent of that. He refused to accept, corporations, they judge shop. Making sure they get the right judge that'll support them. He doesn't want to ban that. Everything you can imagine, any kind of regulation that would keep this kind of thing from happening, he has actively supported, even sponsoring these bills. So for him to say this now, or have someone write this for him now, after 40 years of supporting just these policies, and Democrats know this. I remember during the primaries, they were attacking him for this kind of thing. He's trying to pose himself as a liberal right now because they're all powerful, but that's not his record.
Everything he says just comes across as completely hollow to me. He says, "We are not going to go alone. We are going to do it by meeting with our allies, cybersecurity, climate change, as well as what we are. No one nation can solve the crises of our times. Nuclear liberation, mass migration, experiencing now with the pandemic. There is no wall high enough to keep the virus out, and our own vaccine supply as it grows to meet our needs. And we are meeting them. We'll become an arsenal for vaccines. We will become an arsenal of vaccines for other countries, just as America is an arsenal of democracy for the world." And that's just hilarious, isn't it? An arsenal of vaccines and an arsenal of democracy for the world. I mean, does he know that he is actually speaking the truth there? I mean, an arsenal is something harmful, isn't it? It's an arsenal of weapons. Is he saying that democracy is like some kind of nuclear weapon? It's there for firing off at other countries and to be used in a military manner? And half of what he says here doesn't make sense, but just this terminology here, an arsenal of vaccines and an arsenal of democracy, I think that's just brilliant. What do you make of it, Matt?
Well, that's the reason I added it in these notes, because, the old arsenal democracy, World War II era, and actually World War I era, sloganeering, he's now attaching it to vaccines. Can you imagine that? That's his legacy. But they were all talking about weapons before. And so he is, I don't think without realizing it, weaponizing this whole idea. The war on Russia more recently has been about the Russian vaccine. And he's refusing to deal with what's happening now. Just right after people started getting shot up with this stuff, the massive, and we all know someone who suffered because of this vaccine. I know at least one person close to me. Nothing is being reported. And no one has any idea what the long-term effects of this are going to be. You have hundreds of deaths right now, and people who've caught the virus recently have all been vaccinated. Something like 15,000 adverse reactions, and those numbers are low. Of course, you know they're I'm sure it's much higher. This is a weapon. You know, when they started doing research on the SARS vaccine back in 2002, there was the results were outrageous. These hyperimmune responses, inflammation throughout the body, especially their lungs, this so-called enhanced immune response. They've been working on this for some time, and even Fauci himself, in unguarded moments, say that the new coronavirus vaccine can trigger these lethal immune reactions, these vaccine enhancements, when vaccinated people come in contact with the actual virus out in the world. And then he, you know, instead of listening to himself and taking his own advice, he then wants to fast track these vaccines funded by Bill Gates without the phase two safety studies. These have been rammed through, and the long-term we can't even talk about long-term effects yet. It normally takes, 15 years to get a vaccine, shot out for anything. This is done in a few months. We have no idea what these effects are going to be. This is the gene therapy is brand new, and it gets to surpass the phase two phase of the American system of approving a vaccine because it's considered experimental. And it's a giveaway for all these companies who are being incredibly wealthy because of all of this.
Well, I think 2 weeks back, you had a 1 in 500,000 chance of catching coronavirus in Britain. And if you had the AstraZeneca vaccine, you had a 1 in 250,000 chance of getting blood clots. So it really doesn't stack up, does it, that you should be taking these things? Getting back to Biden's quotes here, he says, "In my discussions with President Xi Jinping, I told them we welcome the competition. We are not looking for conflict, but I made absolutely clear that we will defend America's interests across the board. America will stand up to unfair trade practices that undercut American workers in industries, like subsidies from state-to-state owned operations and enterprises. I also told the president of China, we will maintain a strong military presence in the Pacific, just as we do in NATO and Europe, not to start a conflict, but to prevent one." So he's going to be patrolling waters that are hundreds of thousands of miles away from America with a strong military presence. And this isn't to start a conflict, but to prevent one. I mean, he's basically saying that America is going to have a military presence anywhere. It's hardly peaceful, is it, to have the American military on your borders like they're doing to Russia in Europe, as he points out here, as if it's perfectly fine what NATO are doing to Russia at the moment. He's saying he's going to be doing the same thing to China. What do you make of what he has to say here, Matt?
Well, this is a man who in the Senate was the head of the committee that dealt with international affairs. And yet he deals with foreign policy only in a few paragraphs. He says completely contradictory things, but he definitely equates China winning this economic competition with the fact that the American military is going to be very close to Chinese borders, involved in Taiwan and all the rest of it. American companies have been subsidized by the Export-Import Bank in D.C. for decades to invest around the world, especially China. The insurance policies, if anything were to go wrong, subsidized by the federal government. He won't do anything about that. He supported that in the past, and he has no power to do that. Not to mention the fact that Trump said the exact same thing. This, the anti-China thing, is both parties are saying it, although for very different reasons. And we've done several shows here on Thursday about the deliberate attempts of the U.S. military to provoke both Chinese, Russian, and Iranian jets and ships to try to provoke a war. The attacks on Syria, all of these things, we don't really know what's happening there. The news media is completely censored coming from there. And every attack is considered defensive. They say we're attacking these people to prevent a war or something like that. It's purely Orwellian. But given his mental state, he's not making these decisions. Talking about a Biden administration doesn't make any sense because, as we all know, he's not really involved in the day-to-day development of policy. But to connect the economics thing with the military thing is showing that this is the Americans losing this war, and using a very decrepit military apparatus to try to force some kind of victory.
That's what he means by America is back. He means that there's a puppet presidency. The president does nothing. He's just a spokesperson for the forces behind him. That's what he means by America is back, because that's what America was until President Trump got elected. He says America is an idea, the most unique idea in history. We are created, all of us equal. It is who we are, and we can't walk away from that principle. We are dealing with the American idea. With regard to Russia, I know it concerns some of you, but I made very clear to Putin that we are not going to seek, excuse me, escalation, but their actions will have consequences if it turns out to be true, and they turned out to be true. So I responded directly and proportionally to Russia's interference in our elections and cyber attacks on our government and businesses. They did both of these things, and I told them we will respond, and we have. But we can also cooperate when it is in our mutual interest. We did it when we extended a New START treaty in nuclear arms, and we are working to do it on climate change. But he understands. We will respond. Again, it's very disconnected here. And this idea, America is an idea. America is a people. It was a country that was settled by Europeans, predominantly English. That's why English is the language that is spoken there. And this idea that everybody is all equal, that isn't what America was founded upon. This idea of all men being equal at the time, that was only considered to be talking about white men. And all you have to do is look at the reports from the time, from the primary source documents, and they make that clear. And that idea that all white men were equal only makes sense when they are in juxtaposition to blacks, because you can say, well, when you compare white people to black people, all whites are equal. But it doesn't. But you cannot compare whites and blacks and Chinese and then say they're all equal, because quite clearly they're not. They're only equal in relevance to one another. They've managed to turn the Constitution on its head, and we know this, and this is one of the main things that we criticize in this. But this idea that America is an idea, it's a nonsense. People don't die for ideas. People die for their blood, and blood is thicker than water. And I know that you all want to talk about what he was saying about Russia here, Matt, so I'll pass it over to you.
I've been saying for a long time, in my Russia book, there's a certain projection here. People like Biden wish they had Putin's popularity. Interfering in elections. This is nonsensical sloganeering. They don't even know what the accusation is, let alone any evidence. We still don't know what the evidence is. The guy starts off by talking about this ideological notion, the most unique idea in history, which is, I guess, just vague equality. And that's what America is. And then after saying that for a couple of sentences, he immediately runs to Putin and about that they're going to escalate but not escalate. And Putin interfered in our elections. So even when these things are written out for him, it's almost like he's just skipped over paragraphs here. And he was really mumbling through all of this. He doesn't say what he's even talking about with what he's responding to. What cyber attack is he talking about? They don't even know what the whole concept of the, you know, and what, I guess it didn't happen in 2020, because Biden, of course, is the most popular president of all time. So I have no idea. These are incredibly vague statements. One sentence doesn't seem to have anything to do with the other sentences around it. And it really it's embarrassing here. Not surprising, of course, but he seems to be interspersing ideological concepts, economic concepts, military and foreign affairs, all in the same paragraph. So it's really hard to argue with something when you really don't know what to grab onto here. And he goes and then, you know, he foreign policy, domestic policy, back and forth. In this very confused way, and saying something stupid like, you know, equality is what America is, having no idea what the colonial idea was in this respect. The U.S. was founded as an aristocracy, just not an aristocracy with titles. You had 9% of people were able to vote in 1800. So, this is just a completely invented mythical idea that the couch potatoes are going to think is true.
He's just using buzzwords, isn't he? Election interference, America is an idea, we're all created equal, and then he moves on to foreign policy. On Iran and North Korea, nuclear programs that present security threats to America and the world, we are going to work closely with our allies to address the threats posed by both of these countries through diplomacy as well as stern deterrence. American leadership means ending the forever war in Afghanistan. Again, Iran and North Korea are both round the other side of the world. How can they present a security threat to America? It's America that is presenting the security threat to North Korea by having all its military bases in South Korea. And it's America's allies that are presenting the threat to Iran, again, with military bases all circling around Iran. And this idea that they will actually leave Afghanistan, I mean, we've gone into that before, how ridiculous that is, and how they will still have lots of Americans there. They just won't actually be official military Americans there. But what do you make of what he has to say here about nuclear programs, Matt?
Well, this is, you know, this is one of these he mentions at least three countries in three sentences. He doesn't explain, you know, all the, you know, with the Iranian and North Korean, their complaints always have to do with American imperial policies abroad. The Americans don't get any oil from Central Asia or from Iran. Zero. The only thing you could possibly mean here is that Iran poses a threat to Israel, therefore we have to be there. I don't know what allies he's talking about other than Israel and possibly the UK. And then somehow, though, at the same time, this same leadership means that we're going to withdraw from Afghanistan. So we're going to threaten at least two places, three places, four places if you include China. But this very same doctrine means we have to pull out of Afghanistan. This doesn't make any sense. He doesn't connect any of these together. He is all over the place. And we've talked about the nuclear issue, that really the idea is to make sure these countries either stay in the third world or get pushed back into the third world. Because here you're really talking about nuclear power and nothing else. These are very, very, especially Iran, has a diverse economy. And this is really, this is the threat to Israel and therefore to the U.S. The U.S. has absolutely no interest in the Middle East or Central Asia, with the exception of defending Israel. There's no real economic ties there. The energy issue is a non-issue as far as America is concerned. I talked about this in my show yesterday. And it's just, these are vague ideas that, so engagement against North Korea is the same thing as pulling out or surrendering to the Taliban in Afghanistan. I can't make any sense out of it.
It is bizarre that he links all of them up together. He says, even as we maintain the right to capacity to suppress threats to the homeland, make no mistake, in 20 years, terrorism has metastasized. It's way beyond Afghanistan. Those of you in committees, foreign relations committees, defense, we have to address threats to the United States wherever they come from. Al-Qaeda and ISIS, Syria, Somalia, other places in Africa and the Middle East. We won't ignore what our intelligence agencies have determined to be the most lethal terrorist threat today. White supremacy is terrorism. So if we look at the start of that, he is claiming that Al-Qaeda, Syria, Somalia and places in Africa and the Middle East are somehow threatening America? How are they threatening America? And didn't Donald Trump ban migration from Somalia? I seem to recall that one of the executive orders that Biden undid of Trump was to allow people back into America from Somalia. So quite what is he saying here? Does America need protecting from Somalia or does it not? And of course, he's going to allege that so-called white supremacy is terrorism, and we know what he means by white supremacy is just Donald Trump supporters. So he's basically saying half of America are terrorists here. What do you make of his bluster about terrorism here, Matt?
Other than it's simply comedic. You know, you read this stuff, or you listen to this stuff really for its comedic value and nothing else. You read this whole fairly brief transcript, and it seems to be there's not really a single policy other than the IRS that's advocated. The language is so vague and so confused that now that administration could do anything and will fit with what he says here. He gives no specifics. He goes from domestic policy to foreign policy. Everyone's a threat except his people. He's listing the kind of Syria, Somalia, Al-Qaeda, ISIS. These are just taken right out of the New York Times. And that the intelligence agencies are the ones that he's going to follow. They've determined that Somalia is a terrible threat to the U.S. But again, we'll let the immigrants in, and anyone who opposes it is therefore a white supremacist and therefore a terrorist. And if they're a terrorist, they're, you know, a de facto criminal. So the concept here is he's going to ban any rejection of his policies on the same grounds as he would ban any terrorist activity. And terrorists are largely either a figment of their imagination or a response to American arrogance. The U.S. has already been driven out of Somalia. It's been driven out of Afghanistan. And I'm still waiting for ISIS to hit an American or an Israeli or a Saudi target. You know that's never going to happen. So this is bizarrely confusing. None of it makes sense. And he doesn't explain the white supremacy part. He just one sentence and then he moves on to something else. These are confused, vague, semi-ideas that can fit any policy. So now the people who control him can do whatever they please, and they could look at this speech and say, yeah, we're following what we're saying here.
Well, of course, he has to bring George Floyd into this as well. He says, I know they want to help meet this moment as well. My fellow Americans, we have to come together to rebuild trust between law enforcement and the people they serve, to root out systemic racism in our criminal justice system and enact police reform in George Floyd's name that has passed the House already. I know Republicans have their own ideas and are engaged in productive discussions with Democrats in the Senate. We need to work together to find a consensus, but let us get it done next month by the first anniversary of George Floyd's death. I mean, they're still talking about George Floyd as if he's some kind of saint, as if there's systemic racism in the criminal justice system just because there happen to be more black people in prison than whites. Well, the reason for that is because they're more likely to commit crime. And the only way that you can get less black people in prison is if you start to ignore the crimes that they carry out, which is, of course, what we are starting to now see happening over there in America. But you were saying something about him actually being responsible for the reason why there are so many blacks in prison. Is that right, Matt?
Well, I mean, he's not responsible for that fact, but he's one of the authors of the Omnibus Crime Bill in 1994. During the primaries, the other Democrats were attacking him for this. I know these race hucksters, you know, NAACP and groups like that were attacking him because this crime bill increased all kinds of money for police and lengthened sentences, especially for drug crimes. And he not only sponsored this bill, but he defended it right up until the primaries just a short time ago. We all know what George Floyd is. We all know what actually happened there. We know that nothing makes any sense about this case. And the only thing that if you want to try to make sense out of these comments, it means that cops simply can't do their job where a black male is concerned. Unless I suppose they're blacks themselves. If you're a white cop right now, you have the most difficult job in the world. I have no idea. And if you're a black criminal, you're so okay, I could resist all I want. I'm pretty sure this guy isn't going to do much. Because if he does, the media will get a hold of it and there'll be more riots. So what does that mean for a white cop in a black area? So it's going to mean then also more white people in prison. I mean, I'm not really sure what else this could mean except, you know, not enforcing the law against black criminal gangs. And trying to find reasons to throw white guys in prison to even it out. Those are pretty huge numbers because you have blacks with a huge percentage of the violent crime in America being 12% of the population. So that means a lot of white people in prison and a lot of blacks let go in order for this to work out. So, I mean, Biden did come out against the defund the police stuff relatively early on. But he was backing away from some of his earlier comments a few years ago over the crime bill, because again, you have all these you know black liberals attacking him that he's the reason why you have all these long sentences for what they consider minor crimes. So you know, for him to talk about this now, this is typical. It's typical hypocrisy. He doesn't really believe what he's saying, but this is what someone's writing for him.
12% of the population, yet 50% of the murders, and it must actually be a much smaller percentage of the population than 12% that is actually responsible for 50% of the murders. He says, you can see on television the viciousness of the hate crimes over the past year, and for too long, others in the House can do the same and send that legislation to my desk, which I will gladly, anxiously sign. Also, Congress can get to my desk the Equality Act to protect LGBTQ Americans. For all transgender Americans watching at home, especially young people, you want to know your president has your back. I mean, what is he talking about here? Viciousness of hate crimes? I mean, they say that hate crimes is just criticism on Twitter. I mean, what is he talking about here? Is he talking about these attacks on Asians that they've said is white supremacy, and it turns out that it's actually black people. And they're saying that these black people are white supremacists, and the reason why they are attacking these Asians is because of white supremacy. Therefore, it's white supremacy that is to blame, even though it's blacks that are actually attacking these Asians. I mean, where are all these violent, vicious hate crimes that he is talking about here? I mean, I can't really recall seeing any over the last year, certainly not in America. I mean, there was an attack on a synagogue. There was that Bowers guy. There was an attack in New Zealand. That was a couple of years back. And yes, they were vicious, violent hate crimes. But that's it. I don't think there have been any over the last year, and certainly not in America. I don't know what he's referring to here, Matt. Do you?
Well, because of the way the media describes these things, you know, they'll invent whatever they need to. Yeah, it does include, you know, criticism. This is one of the ways to get more white people in prison, that any criticism of this is going to be considered white supremacy and therefore terrorism and therefore a criminal offense. You know, the Asian thing, we all know that race had nothing to do with it. It was very clear why this guy did what he did. But the left knows that Asians and white people have a lot in common. If you remember the Rodney King riots, the rooftop Koreans, some of my favorite people of all time were the rooftop Koreans. They recognize that in these riots, Asian areas, at Koreatown and Chinatown, are targeted all the time. And to split Asians from whites, they had to invent this crime, and then get, you know, these Asians to start supporting leftist causes, which is very rare for them. And I don't know if they've succeeded or not. So they invented a story based allegedly on race, because they know that Asians and whites, East Asians, I mean, have a lot in common, have supported one another ever since 1992. So trying to split that de facto coalition is part of what's going on here as far as the Asians are concerned.
Well, I got one last quote here that I'll bring up because I know that you would like to comment on this one. He says, another thing, let's authorize the Violence Against Women Act, which has been law for 27 years. 27 years ago, I wrote it. It will close the boyfriend loophole to keep guns out of the hands of abusers. The court order said this is an abuser. You can own a gun. To close that loophole that has existed, it is estimated that 50 women are shot and killed by an intimate partner every month in America. 50 a month. Let's pass it and save some lives. Well, I can't actually make out what he's really trying to say there, Matt, but I'm sure you can. What's he trying to say there?
Well, the VAWA thing has been an issue that I've been bringing up for quite some time. I have a 20-page paper on this. It was part of the 1994 crime bill, actually, and the point was that the rule of law, the rules of evidence, probable cause, the presumption of innocence, all of this is gone when it comes to men being accused of this kind of thing by a woman. Biden claims he wrote it, but he's actually admitted the feminist movement wrote it, that the only reason there's any violence against women is because of male patriarchal attitudes, not drugs, not alcohol, nothing else. Phyllis Schlafly attacked this back in 2005, the way that they redefined abuse entirely. At name-calling, criticism, insulting, blaming the so-called victim, ignoring the woman's needs, jealousy, even facial expression. And this is what the Justice Department now is calling violence. And there is no way for a man to respond. There's no way for a man to make a case. The woman is granted free lawyers, free attorneys, entire institutions, but not to mention the DA. The VAWA is a absolutely vicious, the most anti-family piece of legislation that's ever been passed. And he's, you know, it made feminism American law in every respect when concerning criminal law. And so the presumption of innocence is gone. Security and person and property are gone. And this is one of the most dangerous things that he's talking about here. And I've been talking about this for a long time.
Well, that seems to be very common now. A very common way of banning just about everything is to equate it with violence. Once you equate words with violence, you can basically make anything you like illegal, can't you? Any speech you like. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.